Psalm 31. In you, O Lord, I have taken refuge. Let me never be put to shame. Deliver me in your righteousness. Turn your ear to me. Come quickly to my rescue. Be my rock of refuge, a strong fortress to save me. Since you are my rock and my fortress, for the sake of your name, lead and guide me. Free me from the trap that is set for me, for you are my refuge. Into your hands I commit my spirit. Redeem me, O Lord, the God of truth. I hate those who cling to worthless idols. I trust in the Lord. I will be glad and rejoice in your love, for you saw my affliction and knew the anguish of my soul. You have not handed me over to the enemy, but have set my feet in a spacious place. Be merciful to me, O Lord, for I am in distress. My eyes grow weak with sorrow, my soul and my body with grief. My life is consumed by anguish and my years by groaning. My strength fails because of my affliction, and my bones grow weak. Because of all my enemies, I am the utter contempt of my neighbors. I am a dread to my friends. Those who see me on the street flee from me. I am forgotten by them as though I were dead. I have become like broken pottery, for I hear the slander of many. There is terror on every side. They conspire against me and plot to take my life. But I trust in you, O Lord. I say, you are my God. My times are in your hands. Deliver me from my enemies and from those who pursue me. Let your face shine on your servant. Save me in your unfailing love. Let me not be put to shame, O Lord, for I have cried out to you. But let the wicked be put to shame and lie silent in the grave. Let their lying lips be silenced, for with pride and contempt they speak arrogantly against the righteous. How great is your goodness, which you have stored up for those who fear you, which you bestow in the sight of men on those who take refuge in you. In the shelter of your presence you hide them from the intrigues of men. In your dwelling you keep them safe from accusing tongues. Praise be to the Lord, for he showed his wonderful love to me when I was in a besieged city. In my alarm I said, I am cut off from your sight. Yet you heard my cry for mercy when I called to you for help. Love the Lord, all his saints. The Lord preserves the faithful, but the proud he pays back in full. Be strong and take heart, all of you who hope in the Lord. Now we can.
When I read Psalm 31, lots of things kind of go around in my head because it's a little bit of a soundtrack to many different people who exercise belief in the Bible. So later on in the Psalms, in Psalm 71, the first three verses of Psalm 31 are kind of echoed, just as sometimes you find when you listen to new music, whether it's popular music or classical music, you get some ideas, some words, some notes, which you recognize from another song. You kind of sometimes it bugs you. You kind of you think, well, I've heard this before. I've heard something like this before. And then you suddenly remember where you've heard it before. Psalm 31, too, is echoed by Jonah when he's in the belly of the fish. And when he calls out to God, he talks about the fact that he wants to seek God and to abandon the idols which have distracted him in the past. There's a little phrase in the psalm, verse 13, which speaks about terror on every side. And Jeremiah, the prophet, one of the things that was said about him is that when he exercised his ministry, it was terror on every side. It was not a compliment. It was kind of supposed to be a joke that he was kind of a miserable prophet. Of course, classically, when Jesus is nailed to the cross, He uses the words of verse 5 as one of his last words, "Into your hands I commit my spirit." So God's people throughout history have found this psalm a song which resonates with them, which speaks to them in different situations. And Christians look back at this psalm as a psalm that gives Jesus words to express what he's doing on the cross, that give Jesus words that express a real confidence in that what he's doing is something which is not a waste of time, but is leading to some appropriate outcome. Now, said a couple of times in looking at the Psalms that one of the ways that I read the Psalms is to read each individual psalm looking for four different things. And the first thing I look for is to follow the structure of the psalm. How has the psalmist written his psalm? So we listen to a song, and maybe in a song there's a verse, there's a verse, a chorus, a bridge, and a chorus. And the structure is fairly easy to follow. Now, this particular psalm seems to have this structure. Two kind of halves and a little epilogue at the end. And the first half, verses 1 to 8, describe the psalmist like a hunted man, someone who has a trap awaiting him and feeling threatened and looking to God as a place of safety, a place of refuge. And then in the second half of the psalm, it speaks of the psalmist as a rejected man, someone who feels as though the world has turned against him. And of course, when you think about this, when you think about the fact that Jesus used this psalm upon the cross, you can begin to kind of see why he draws the words from this psalm, because ultimately Jesus is the hunted man, and the final days of his life in the Gospels are a man who is sought out, who is harried and arrested and falsely tried and placed upon a cross, and a rejected man. He is the man of sorrows and acquainted with grief. He is the ultimate rejected man. The perfect man, who should have been admired, praised and glorified, rejected. The one who is the cornerstone, the one who should have been the most vital part of everyone's life building, becomes a reject stone, the rejected man. Of course, both half of these stories lead the psalmist to trust in God. And in the end, the little epilogue speaks about praising God and turning to him in confidence. So that's the structure, and we're going to be looking a bit about that a little bit later on. And then, when I read a psalm, I think, well, how can I focus upon what the main image of this psalm is? What are the pictures that the psalmist uses to help me to understand what he's trying to say and understand how I can have confidence in God? Now, as we saw in the reading, as we saw from some of our songs, the main image is the idea of being a refuge. In you, O Lord, I have taken refuge. Let me never be put to shame. And there are other words. Verse 2, be my rock of refuge, a strong fortress to save me, since you are my rock and my refuge. And he comes back to it again in verse 19. When he says, how great is your goodness, which you have stored up for those who fear you, which you bestow in the sight of men on those who take refuge in you. A hiding place. The great image of the psalm is God as a hiding place, a place of safety, a place of security. Of course, there are other pictures in the psalm. A spacious place, verse 8. The shelter of your presence, verse 20. A trap in verse 4, already spoken about that, hunted man, a trap. Broken pottery, verse 12, a besieged city, verse 21. So he's a refuge. He's a hunted man who seeks refuge in God, who asks that God might free him from the trap. Verse 4. Into your hands I commit my spirit. And the outcome there in verse 8 is that you have brought me to a spacious place. You've brought me to a place where there's lots of room. Now, if you're a hunted man, if you're a fugitive, you're always running from one hiding place to another. It seems as though the whole world is closing in on you. Everything seems to restrict you. You don't know quite where to go. You see those kind of chases in a film where people are running down alleyways and they're turning and running down another alleyway. And inevitably, the chase ends with them coming to a brick wall that's too high to climb. And they look round, there's nowhere else to go, and the people that are pursuing them are getting closer and closer and closer and closer. The problem with being a hunted person is that we get trapped. We feel as though our space is squeezed. We've got no space. But the psalmist expresses his confidence in God, the fact that God is his refuge, by saying, "You've brought me to a spacious place." Eugene Peterson, imagining what this means, speaks about it in this way. We need far more living space than we can acquire on our own. Sins, our own and others, crowd in on us. Salvation sets us down in wide open fields where we are free to live, liberated in Christ. Yes, life squeezes us, pressures squeeze us, guilt squeezes us so that we feel as though we might be trapped. But suddenly God comes and he opens up the space in front of us so that we feel we've got room. We're not being squeezed and crushed. We suddenly have room to breathe. That's what it means to have a refuge, isn't it? To have a refuge means that although we feel we're being hunted, we have a safe place where we can breathe a sigh of relief. That brings me to the third thing that I look at when I'm seeking to read a psalm, and that's to experience the mood of the psalm. To try and feel what the psalmist is feeling. Someone has said that this is the model of prayer that is confident of being heard. Psalm 31 is the model of a prayer that is confident of being heard. But there's an odd thing about it, isn't there? We see the two halves. The psalmist has got to the safe place in verse 8. And you kind of think, well, that might be a convenient place to end. And then in verse 9, he speaks about the fact that he is a rejected man. He says, "Be merciful to me, O Lord, for I am in distress. My eyes grow weak with sorrow, my soul and my body with grief." He starts up again, and he begins to pray, and he begins to seek help. And at first sight, this seems rather strange. He's got home, he's got to the safe place, and now he seems to be troubled again. But we need to remember that life is not always simple. Life is not always so easy. Sometimes faith and doubt are interleaved. We get a victory. We get to a place of security. And things go well, and then doubts emerge. Fresh threats arise. It's interesting, isn't it, how sometimes when we're Christians in our younger life, we deal with certain challenges and we feel that we get to a place of confidence and we kind of feel that we are really secure in God. And then we come to another stage in our life. We move through being a younger person and maybe we move into being married and having children, and suddenly things become more complicated. And we get a whole different set of challenges, a whole different set of things that make it difficult for us to trust. And we find that we need to relearn. We need to reconfigure our confidence. What it means to trust God as a single person is quite different from trusting God as a married person or a parent or someone moving into middle life or older years. This week, Anne and I went to the solicitor to have a new will written. And it's interesting, we wrote the first will when we were in our 40s. And we felt it was a really important thing to do because we had young children, and we were concerned about what might happen to them if we both died. And of course, in our early 40s, we didn't really think too much about the fact that we were going to be dying, because at 40 it didn't seem as though, and I know people in their 40s die and younger than that die, but we didn't seem to think at that moment that death was imminent. But sitting in that room, talking about our will and our intentions in our 60s, suddenly realizing that death was certainly 20 years closer than it was the first time we wrote our wills, realized that the will writing process and the thinking about our circumstance at this time required us to think in a slightly different way. What does it mean for you to trust God today? What does it mean for you to be in God's refuge today? Sometimes we need to reconfigure what it means to trust. We can't rest on past victories of faith. We can't rest on past securities. Sometimes things wash through our lives that seemingly challenge everything we've previously believed and understood. Sometimes there is a shaking of our life and we kind of wonder whether we're up or down. We wonder whether anything that we were sure about in the past is actually certain. And the psalmist reflects that sometimes in life we move from uncertainty to the spacious place, but then something comes into our life that shakes us up and we wonder again, and we need reassurance. Those words, my eyes grow weak, my soul and my body with grief, verse 9. My life is consumed with anguish and my years with groaning. My strength fails because of my affliction and my bones grow weak. Eye, body, strength, bones. Sometimes there are stresses in life that go right through you. They touch every part of you. You ache. You feel strain. You feel as though you might have your head explode. You feel that your bones are raging like fire. Sorrow and grief sometimes just defines our life and defines our whole human experience. And that was the experience of the psalmist here. Be gracious to me, O Lord, for I am in distress, my eyes wasted from grief, my soul and my body also, for my life is spent with sorrow and my tears with sighing. And the picture there in verse 13, that I am like a shattered pot, like Humpty Dumpty who's fallen off the wall. Who will put Humpty Dumpty together again? I'm like broken pottery. Have you ever had that moment? That moment when you're in the kitchen and time stands still, that very precious thing that auntie, someone or other, has given you as a wedding present, as kind of somehow falling from the kitchen worktop, falling slowly to the floor, kind of about, I'm pretty good at catching, actually. But you just don't catch, and it crashes into loads and loads of pieces. Whatever super glue you've got, there's no way that you can do it. Anne sees everything. Anne has X-ray vision. And there's no way that you can kind of present that again as something which is entire. Broken pottery. Life like a broken pot that you just can't put back together again. Broken pottery and people saying terror on every side. Sometimes it can be really painful to be mocked by others. And of course, as we think of Jesus praying the words of verse 5, we remember that soundtrack of Jesus' life so often was mockery, particularly at the cross. And the amazing thing is, he was seeking to do the very best for us, and yet human beings were doing the very worst to him. The fourth thing that we do when I read a psalm is to look for the wider testimony. What's the testimony of this psalm in the light of the whole of the Bible's revelation? And of course, we've said that the thing that makes us think about this in terms of the whole Bible is the fact that Jesus uses this psalm, Psalm 31 and verse 5. Into your hands I commit my spirit. Redeem me, O Lord, the God of truth. Jesus uses this psalm. Jesus says of the Father, you are my refuge. Jesus makes the Father his refuge in order that he might become a refuge for us. He becomes abandoned so that we might have a safe place. We might be brought to a spacious place. We might know the peace and acceptance of God through the Lord Jesus Christ. As we saw when we looked at Psalm 22, Jesus inhabits the language of the psalm. He becomes broken for us, a broken pot upon the cross. He steps into the trap. He is hunted. He is rejected. He takes refuge in order that we might be able to take refuge in him. He trusts unseen hands. He trusts the unseen one. And as he places himself in the hands of his Father, he is safe. What seems to be a disaster becomes a victory. So, the cross helps us to see what this psalm is trying to tell us. That into your hands I commit my spirit, I hand over my life. And it's kind of amplified in those words in verses 14 and 15. But I trust in you, O Lord. I say, you are my God. My times are in your hands. Deliver me from my enemies and from those who pursue me. I always find those words really comforting, to know that my times, my years, my days, my minutes are in God's hands. That all of my past, all of my present, and all of my future are in God's hands. He's got the whole world in his hands. He's got me and you, brother, in his hands. He's got your times in his hands. Why do we worry about tomorrow? Why do we worry about the future when God has us in his hands? When Jesus came to the world and when he was nailed upon the cross, it seemed as though the whole enterprise of God was put under threat. But we know that the whole enterprise of God was actually coming to its fulfillment through the cross and the resurrection. Our times are in God's hands. Even in the darkest moments, the most difficult moments, God knows what he's doing, and God has us in his eye and in his heart. Our times are in his hands. That kind of breathes a really wonderful, quiet confidence in God. God knows what he's doing. God knows our days. God knows our needs before we ask him. He knows about tomorrow. Sometimes we face a day, we face a future day, and we think we don't quite know how we're going to cope with that day. We wonder quite what we're going to do, but God knows about that time. Our times are in his hands. Hard times, easy times, puzzling times. One of the followers of Jesus, Stephen, who we read of in Acts chapter 7, finds himself in a situation where he is a hunted man, hunted by Saul of Tarsus before he became Paul. And a rejected man, rejected even though he speaks about the history of the Bible to the people who had the Bible, the Jewish people. They refuse to listen, they close their ears, and they decide to stone Stephen, one of the first deacons. And Stephen prays words of forgiveness and prays words of commitment. Into your hands I commit my spirit. First Christian martyr expresses the confidence that we've read of here in this psalm, recognizing that even as stones hailed upon him, that his times were in God's hands. Now, if we believe that, into your hand I commit my spirit, words of Jesus, words of Stephen, words for us, we can be confident about any day, anything. And the psalmist ends with the epilogue of praise. Praise be to the Lord, for he showed me the wonders of his love. It seemed to be so bad. It seemed as though I was hunted and rejected. But God did something, even through the worst moment, did something for me. In my storm, in my alarm, I said, I will be cut off from your sight. Yet you heard my cry for mercy when I called to you for help. It seemed to be like the end, but you made it like a beginning. Be strong and take heart, all you who hope in the Lord. My times are in his hands. Therefore, why should I be afraid? He is the God who gives refuge, who even in improbable circumstances, when our nose is against a wall that's too high to climb, he opens up a spacious place before us. Praise God.